Greenies Plumbing Service brings you
Phoenix City.
Phoenix City Friend of the Week. We are back at Tower of Dave's workplace, which we're not going to name again.
Yeah, we are here.
We've got a full complement of podcasters, Dave, Cam and Frosty, all here.
Good evening.
Morning.
Morning. And tonight we have special guest Chris Greenacker joining us. Thank
Good
you for
evening.
Joining us.
Good evening, guys. Thank you for having me here.
No worries.
We have an audience as well.
We do have an audience. We have people ready to cut us off if we ask the wrong questions, but hopefully we tread on the right side of things.
The fact that Courtney brought a bouncer is pretty funny.
If I remember correctly, you were on episode 2 of Phoenix City, and we're now up to episode 129, wow. Which I'm not sure if it says that more about us than you.
Or... If only the quality had improved since then.
You've arrived since then, Dave, so yeah. It hasn't.
No, it has.
Yeah, I guess things have changed quite a bit in the 2 and a bit years since we last had you on. I mean, when we did, you were an assistant coach alongside... No, I don't think Des was even an assistant at that point. He was just goalkeeping coach.
I think Des was still goalkeeping coach.
And Ernie was in charge.
Just plodding on nicely, I think. And then sort of all the turmoil sort of started, I think. And obviously then Des arrived and, you know, there was one or two changes there. And we picked up the pieces pretty much.
Yeah. Was there much change... Okay, fair enough. I should stick to my run sheet.
You immediately skipped the entire run sheet.
1-0 loss to Newcastle.
You've got one sentence in before skipping it.
Auckland on the weekend, there was a 1-0 loss to Newcastle. Obviously, I don't think we deserve to lose this game. Would you agree with that summation of the game? The way that everything went, 1-0 was pretty unfair.
Yeah. I think if you obviously look at the game and brutally honestly, we had more of the clear cut opportunities. I think that's obvious to everyone. And even Ernie, to his credit, said afterwards we deserved to win the game. If we would have as obviously taken our chances, we would have been home and dry. Wasn't the case. But for me, the way the boys, really took the game to Newcastle Jets and stuck to the task and the bits and pieces we'd worked on during the week, they really stuck to it. And for me, we look like we enjoy the ball a little bit more than we have done in recent weeks. I thought, particularly in midfield, we played the ball around quite nicely. And obviously, I thought Roy and Burnsy were a constant threat. I said to the guys during the second half that Sarpreet looks like he's suddenly feels like, I belong here now. And I think some of the positions that he took up were first class, and we got the ball to him. And even the reshuffle at the back where Jura, I think just after breakfast, we knew that Jura wasn't available. So, I'd immediately, thought we'd give Tom Doyle a go at centre-back, and I think we may have found another position for Tom. I think he looked quite steady there. And obviously, Libby came in at left-back. So throughout the team, I was pleased with pretty much everyone's performance and even the guys that came on, Mikey and Andrea. Tando, he was terrific as well, and I think that save in the second half where he's tipped it onto the post obviously would have changed the outcome of everything and we would have been out of sight. But even to the last 5 minutes we had the one, cleared off the line or whatever, and
Went over the line.
Did it?
I have a photo of the ball over the line.
Yeah, right. But there was already a foul called before that.
Yeah, I think it was...
The whistle blew after the ball crossed the line.
Yeah, but the foul was from Krishna kicking the ball out of the...
So, as I say, on the whole, I was really, really pleased with the performance. Just disappointed we didn't take our chance.
It seemed like a big step up from last week against the Wanderers. Did that week where you could work with the team, going into it, you knew that you were going to be coaching him, did that make a difference as opposed to the previous week?
Oh, a little bit, I think. I think we had a game plan against Western Sydney, and that was to try and stifle them the way they played. They like to play the balls out from the back. They like to, get their fullbacks really, really high up the pitch. They have their wide players coming inside, two midfield players, sitting, and then Rowley then drops in between the back line. So we knew their game plan and how they played. And in large patches, to say we hadn't really had a great deal of time to work with the lads, I thought for an hour we we weren't overly brilliant. I'm not kidding anyone, but at times the press that we'd worked on did work. And even looking back at it, you know, in the debrief of the game, we showed the boys, you know, one or two opportunities that we did have. Roy had the chance that went just wide, would have made a different story. You know, we had a couple of half chances from set plays. I think Roy had a header that went over the bar in the second half. But I honestly feel that we actually ran out of legs. We actually ran out of legs. And I think that was to you know, the untrained eye, I think that was quite obvious to everybody. You know, we got Tom and Scotty playing as wing backs in it with the back three. And even after the game, I think they lost something like 3.5 kilos in the game, which is starting to get like 3% and 4% of your body weight starting to get into dangerous territory. So in terms of the boys giving us absolutely everything, they did. And as I say, we're really disappointed to concede two set plays. I think you're always disappointed to concede set plays. So, you know, in the debrief, we tried to iron that out. We made a couple of adjustments in the Jets game, which I think worked especially from a set piece point of view. And obviously the last goal was a bit calamitous, but I think the game was already dead and buried by then.
Absolutely.
But I think the first goal, I think it was up until like 69th minute.
Yeah,
so
totally.
for you know, 60 to 70 minutes, we were, you know, sort of in it, not without being, obviously they dominated possession without a doubt. I'm not saying making things up. It's, you know, they were the better side, but to say that the limited sort of time we had to work with them, you know, it was a step in the right direction, shall we say.
Did it feel like it was almost a bit of an advantage coming up against Ernie's side in that, one, you know how Ernie plays, he tends to play one way, and the fact that the Jets and Ernie's teams do tend to be more adventurous, did that help as opposed to the short time frame for
maybe a little, but you know, it wouldn't have mattered if it was the Jets or we were playing the Mariners or whoever. We would have still done our due diligence. We would have still been watching their last games. We would have still been watching the players that we thought would come in. Obviously, they were missing three or four, O'Donovan, Brown, to name a couple. But, you know, you still have to do your homework. And our game plan was, you know, I knew they played a high back line. Their two centre-backs aren't overly blessed with pace. Jackson came in, and you know, obviously he's had limited game time, so you know he probably wouldn't have been quite match fit. So you look at that, and you look at obviously the speed of Roy and Nathan, and just think from the previous week, we wanted to obviously get down the sides of their back line as often as we could, and I thought it took us probably 20 to 25 minutes in that game to actually get Nathan in. I think we broke down the left and we had a good break. I just said to the boys, look, we can't leave it for 20 minutes. We need to get in behind earlier than we have done. And I think in the first 10 minutes, we got in quite a lot. And they certainly did that.
I think from the outside looking in, that's the best game that Nathan Bird has played since he came back to the club, and potentially the best game he's played since he left the club back in 2015.
I wouldn't disagree. I had a chat with Nathan, and I'll be brutally honest with you. For me, when strikers, you know, haven't taken chances, that doesn't bother me. I'm more concerned when we're not getting chances.
Yeah.
I've been there myself. I know what it's like. And, you know, it preys on your mind a little bit when you're actually going through games thinking, I cannot see where my next chance is coming from. And so, you know, as long as the guys are still getting there, it'll turn around. I know it will. I think overall, I think it's one of those games, and I've been involved in games like that myself, where you know, if Nathan would have scored, everyone would have probably gone man of the match, absolutely outstanding performance. And he didn't take his chance, and, you know, it's all about the goals. But his overall play was very, very good. He was causing problems left, right and centre. And as I say, from my point of view, I've had games where I've played, and because I've scored, people say, oh, you played really, really well today. And I've kind of gone, that's probably because I scored. I actually thought I did better last week, but no one's mentioned that, but I didn't score last week. But if I was being really critical of my performance, I actually thought my overall game was better last week.
There's that bias towards the goal scorer all the time, isn't there?
Pretty much. I suppose it can shade a judgment, and obviously you've got commentators and stuff there influencing people and all that kind of stuff. But like I say, if you're really honest with yourself, and I think, like I say, other than the odd chance from Nathan, his overall play was probably, as you say, very, very good.
So you mentioned the attackers. Dylan Fox, I thought, was outstanding on the weekend. It was probably, for me, his crowning glory. I've never seen him perform a call like that. What are your thoughts about him? And also Libby, who came in late notice on the left-hand side, and I think he was perhaps in the team of the week as well. Certainly close to it.
Wasn't it? No, I wouldn't agree. Wouldn't disagree, sorry. You know, Dylan... I actually thought he did really, really well against Western Sydney. I thought early on, particularly him and Jura, were very, very, very physical against Santalab. I thought he couldn't get in the game early doors last week. So I think that momentum kind of started last week. And I thought, as you say, he was outstanding. You know, physically, he's a strong boy. And I've sort of said to Dylan to do the boring things really, really well. So do the things that you're really good at. You know, you win your headers, you're physical, you can step in and you win the ball, and then you play the ball, then get back into position. And when he does that, he's arguably up there with some of the best defenders in the league. So as a talent going forward for us, I think he could be a real one for the future for us.
Talking about those young kids, you know, how does it feel seeing that probably the three best performances on the park were Fox, Libby and Singh? And obviously you've been working with those young kids for a while now. You know, how do you see that kind of coming through, that we've now got some of those kids we've been working with for a while actually in the first team squad and, you know, the best performers on the park, arguably?
Yeah, it's very, very pleasing. You know, we're trying to do the best we can. There was a lot of good work done previously to me arriving with Andy Hedge. You know, Andy was a terrific coach, lots of knowledge and as well known for developing players. And then Paul Temple has come in as well, and Paul's kind of taken on that role. We've now got Steve Coleman in there as well. So we've got three A-licensed coaches within our academy, which I don't think there's any other environment in the country that's got that. So off the field, we're really trying to put the processes in place to have the people with the right qualifications and hopefully knowledge about the game. And then, you know, we're seeing the fruits of that now with Libby coming in and obviously Dylan and Sarpreet. I think Sarpreet's been the one on everyone's lips for a while, and you guys that come and watch the games, you've seen his quality. And I think from a main process for those young boys within that environment, in the under-20s environment, I think simply, like, to the untrained eye, you know, you should be a standout at that level, with all respect to the league, and it's a good league and there's some very, very good players in. You know, but arguably some of the guys, you know, they're working shifts and they've got other lives and jobs and that kind of thing. As a young professional, in my opinion, you should be standing out in that league. Physically, you're on the grass every day and that. So if you're then looking to try and get professional contracts, I think you need to be a standout. And I think, like I say, you guys have been there. I think Sarpreet has been an absolute standout. And I think got to a point where some of those games he's really cruised, and that's just because of the quality that he's got. And that's a message I try to send out to a lot of the young guys. Look, if you're wanting to take the next step now and you want to get in the coaches, you know, eye line, you need to be a standout in these games. So they're not just reserve games. They're not just a game for you just to turn up and if you fancy it. No, this is part of your job. This is your livelihood, and only performing well in this environment will you kick on and show people you can kick on. But also on the other hand, you know there will be a percentage of players that won't make it. You're also in the shot window for, you know, other coaches within that league. You know, coaches I've got a lot of respect for, you know, Jose and Chris Milicic and Ricky Herbert. These are guys with lots and you know, got lots of history in the game, and they're good coaches. You know, if it doesn't work out with the Phoenix, you've got these guys watching you, and if you're taking that sort of easy way out, and I'll, you know, kind of turn up when I want to turn up, you're not doing yourself any favours for the wider scope, and obviously totally, like, national honours and stuff. So it's really important that these guys do it. And going back to Sarpreet and Libby, I think arguably, even probably Libby's been the biggest standout just because he's played more games, but he's arguably been our best player in that best premiership.
Is there anyone else in that team that you think is going to be that next player or the next group of players who could make the step up? Or is it?
I think there's a handful, and you probably know the guys. I don't really want to single anybody out because I don't want to put any undue pressure on. But totally. I think with, you know, there are one or two that have really got a good chance. And again, the same message would be, you know, if you want to take the next step, you want to try and get a pro contract, one of those junior contracts, you need to be performing at that level, a very, very good competitive level.
So looking at some not so positive to come out of the weekend, this weekend coming up, we're going to be shy of six internationals. And then on the weekend just gone, we lost Galloway through injury, and obviously Tando's pulled up with a knock as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, looking forward to the team in this weekend, and you've got, you know, effectively eight guys. If Galloway or Tando could, you know, maybe come back, but maybe not, how are we going to approach that?
It's okay, I've got my boots.
Yeah, I was just about to say,
you're not an import anymore.
I'm nationalised now.
I'm already down there, and I do have a pair of studs sitting in the back of the car. I could crack out.
I think on one hand, it's any club or any squad in the world to have internationals in your squad is a privilege. So, you know, we also don't want to say that, you know, we don't want international footballers in our squad. However, it looks... Obviously, it's going to be a very, very different weekend, and we'll have a different outlook on the team. Probably the first time we've obviously got Lowry's probably out for the season. We've got Mullen that's out for the season, and Marco Rossi's got a calf problem that's been niggling for a while, so potentially could be without those guys as well. So we're really going to need everybody. Matea was the reason I took him off the other night, was to save him a booking, because we obviously need another player. Obviously was disappointed with coming off, because I thought his performance deserved to stay on, but it was
he was on a yellow, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was on a yellow. Yeah. So and he looked to tire a little bit, and obviously when you get tired, there's more chance of giving yellow cards away. So yeah. he was the reason we brought him off. So that was a kind of tactical decision, really. But yeah, we are going to be really looking, we might have to look into the academy and promote some players within. It would be quite easy to maybe try and sign someone else on the outside, but then what's the whole purpose of the academy? You know, with looking at last week, I had no problem in Libby stepping up and starting. So if we're not going to promote internally, you know, kind of what's the point of what's the point of a pathway when we can just go get someone else? So hopefully there will be opportunities for some young players to have a taste of first team football, and I hope they embrace the occasion and really show you guys, and not you guys here, because a lot of you know what they're about, but you know, people out there that can put their name on the map.
What's your feelings watching guys like Liam Wood and Sinclair playing in T-dubs
and making goals as well, actually?
Yeah, true, goals. They look like they're kicking on. Is that something you guys keep a close eye on, or is it just kind of anyone in the league who's doing well?
No, obviously we're looking in the league in general for you know, there's one or two young players that are on the radar for us, and obviously we're fully aware of Woody and Jack and what they're capable of. And
so those guys, would they potentially be on the lookout over the off season, for next season perhaps?
Absolutely, I think both of them. You know, Jack's, like you said, excelled, and he's scoring goals, and I think Jack played as a striker when he was a lot younger, and he played majority of the time with us as a right back and a right wing back, so he's certainly shown what he can do. Liam Wood, you know, I've got I'm a huge fan of Liam Wood. He's for such a young player, has got quite a senior head on his shoulders. He's guys that have played football, you know, the guys that organise, the older pros that organise people, and you know, wear the heart on the sleeve. For a young player, that's Woody, and you know, he certainly plays beyond his years in that sense. So yeah, we certainly keep an eye on all of them, and there are obviously other ones out there that we're keeping tabs on.
Yeah, in some ways, like just to cover that from an outside perspective, because there's probably some things you can't cover, but I guess it's those guys in some ways are a victim of just bad timing in many ways. You know, Woody, there's so many centre back options on the books at the moment, and he's very close to being too old to play for that that Wenix side.
Yeah.
And so I can understand why he's looked at other options and gone, I need to be playing first team football somewhere. So taking that step outside of the, you know, the Phoenix environment for maybe a year, maybe 2 years or whatever, you know, he's still young and still well in the mix to come back as a centre back, you know, sometime down the road when he's got more first team experience, and you know, and has been in a pro environment outside of the Phoenix for a while.
He's only solidifying his Phoenix shouts by doing so well at Team London. Yeah. Jack Henry's exactly the same.
Yeah. Absolutely.
By going away and playing first team football on a team that's playing continental football and all that kind of thing.
I think Gully's the classic example of this. He's gone away for a couple of years, and he's really showing how good he is, and he's got himself an All Whites call up because of it. And you'd have to say he's been very good, but would he have been getting those same chances to show how good he is in the Phoenix squad with, you know, the way that league is? Who knows? Maybe he would have, maybe he wouldn't. And he might have, you know, sat on a bench like Rojas did for a long time and not gotten to show as good. So in some ways, it's, you know, it's always sad to see those guys having to move outside of the environment, but it might be the best thing in the long run.
All right, we'll go around the rest of the round before we move on to this weekend's game. Adelaide and Melbourne City had a 1-1 draw, two goals either side of halftime.
Melbourne City just doing the usual taper off at the end of the season.
Yeah, it's weird, eh? The Brisbane Roar got up 2-1 over Sydney FC. Two early goals for Brisbane, Matt Mackay and Jacob Pepper. Milos Ninkovic pulling one back, but Sydney weren't able to get back as close as they wanted to. David Carney apparently tried to leave the ground at halftime after getting subbed off, but was dragged back to the changing rooms, which there's multiple stories over there, but I choose to believe that he was going to march off.
So. I want to know who dragged him back, and did they drag him by the ear?
Arnie, definitely Arnie. You can see him charging down the tunnel afterwards.
Yes.
Just imagine Tony P's mum or something strolling along. And
got him all the year, yeah.
Well, Tony P's not there, so that would have been a bit weird. But yeah, and probably the funnest game of the round was Melbourne Victory 5-2 over the Mariners, where Costa Barbarousis had to fix the net, which was made some great vision on the telly.
And there was great fireworks as well.
Was there?
Yeah.
What happened?
Ocon.
Oh, yeah, Ocon, yeah. He quit afterwards, didn't he?
There were toys thrown, apparently.
Yeah. But yeah, Connor Payne got two goals back at the end, but it was all over. It was 5-2. But yeah, the pictures of Costa fixing the net on the back of Leroy George's shoulders, I think it was excellent.
No, Leroy wasn't doing anything. He was just standing there with his hands out. He was doing
more than the FFA match commissioner was, which I think is a great statement about how the league as a whole is being run at the moment.
Oh, and we're the ground staff or anyone useful. The fact that players have to tape it up themselves is pretty shocking.
Yeah.
And the fact that they don't have any kind of backup for any of it.
Yes.
Did you see who was asking for the tape? It was like the water boy for Victory. He was kind of like going, you go and get tape. It was like, why has no one else gone yet? Yeah. Why is this?
Yeah, the A-League, for all everything that's good about it, there are moments like this where you go, yes. Anyway, we got Brisbane Roar this weekend. As we mentioned, lots of players out. Brisbane Roar off the high of beating Sydney FC, but that was definitely a shock. I think this game is completely there to be for the taking, especially after the way we performed against the Jets. Are my thoughts shared around the table?
If it was the same team as this week, then sure.
That's a fair point, actually.
Yeah, if we were fielding a close to full strength 11, absolutely. But we're going to be missing a midfield in many ways, which is going to make it tough. I mean, hopefully it'll be a chance for some of those young guys to step up and, you know, then it might be a chance. But you'd have to say on paper, it's going to be tough. You're asking a lot of some players who haven't been in that environment before against the side coming off beating Sydney.
Yeah, I don't think we should put that kind of pressure on them, actually, for this week. I think purely because it's going to be quite an experimental lineup.
Yeah, because they listen to us. Yeah. They definitely listen.
They feel the pressure.
Some people do. That's good, but they should. But not this week. This week, I think it is going to be experimental, and you don't want that kind of pressure to be on the kids. You want them to be able to just go out and express themselves. And if the kids do play, obviously, Greeny, you don't have to shed light on that. Obviously, to be fair, you probably haven't even made that decision yet. So yeah, so it's going to be. I think, yes, the opportunity for us to win the game is definitely there. We've still got Burns in attack, so we've still got a quality player up the front, up top, but, you know, out of form, not scoring goals. I'm kind of like talking myself onto the middle of the fence here, really, aren't I? I don't know which way I'm going to go.
If we put the result aside, obviously we'd all love a win. Everyone on the table wants a win. But if we put the result itself aside, what do you want to get out of this game with kids coming in, with players that are not familiar with playing each other? What's the goal here as a coach?
As a coach, I think, again, you want to see young guys go and express themselves and really get amongst it and really, really have a go. We're not going to be sitting back wanting to defend. I don't think there's any point in that. I've been asking the guys, you know, to go and express themselves, enjoy the ball, enjoy the occasion. Don't let the occasion get away from you. And those messages will be pretty simple. I spoke to the guys previously. Obviously, there's quite a number of players who are out of contract, and whoever the next coach is going to be, you know, they've got an opportunity now to stake their claim. While the other guys are away, it's a real opportunity for you to show everyone at the club, the fans, the board, everyone, that you're worthy of a new contract next year. We've, you know, 14 out of contract. Who knows what the squad's going to look like next year? And you've got a real opportunity to state your claim, to say you're worthy of a new contract, and you're effectively playing for your livelihood. And you know, they're pretty high stakes for me. If I was in that position, I'd be wanting to do everything I could to get another contract.
Speaking of, you got a T-shirt that says I could have been doing this all year if you picked me. If you pull off a result.
So you're from England. You're going to play a very straight bat to those kind of questions.
Yeah, that's
he's just fishing for shit.
All right, let's go around the table with score predictions.
I am the Daily Mail of this podcast.
Jesus. I'll start off with a 1-1 prediction, I think.
Oh, I'm going to go 3-1 Brisbane.
Dave?
Let's go 2-1 Brisbane.
Frosty?
I think we're going to nick it, to be honest. Brisbane, there's no way in hell Brisbane are going to take this seriously.
Is that a good thing?
Oh, no, I can see them just walking up going, hey, we just beat Sydney. We're playing against a bunch of kids, and Wellington have been rubbish all year. We got them. And just not showing
up. What's the score on nicking it?
Oh, nicking it, like it'll be a 1-0 or a 2-1.
Fair enough. Greeny, chuck down a score prediction.
1-0 Phoenix.
There we go. Yeah. All right, let's jump into some questions from around the traps.
Before you were talking about the club in the future, specifically, without talking about what you want to do in the future, are you sitting your pro licence?
I am ready to take it, but again, with the FFA there, there's myself and a number of other coaches are waiting to take it. By all accounts, Des, ironically, was on the last pro licence course that was held, and they've, I don't know if they're revamping it, but there's a pilot sort of coaching mechanism going around at the minute. So they're doing a pilot scheme to try and get it to scratch, and then they say there's going to be another intake. So myself and a number of other coaches have been waiting now for 18 months to 2 years to do this.
Learning German, just going over there. Well, they run courses like every week.
That's it. So yeah,
but it'd be quicker to learn German.
Absolutely, yeah, pretty much. So yeah, now obviously we've looked into also going to Ireland and going to the UK and everywhere, and obviously geographically it's unrealistic to be able to do that.
We know a Spanish outfit that'll give you the equivalent of. So.
No, Patrick, no, no.
Got no comment to that.
Yeah, good.
I'm sure there might be.
No, it's not. It's staying in. So you're going to be working with Des again as part of the under-20 setup. Is that an exciting new thing for you?
Yeah, really exciting. And, you know, I kind of was not, I wouldn't say blasé about it, but I actually had I met up with Jonathan Gould probably 9 or 10 months ago. And in the off-season, he was up at his house in Napier, and we went up as a family to see Jonathan and his family. And we're just having a chat, and we had a sit down, and you know, Gould said, you know, what you're looking to do, obviously there's been the changeover with the coaching staff at the Phoenix. So I said, look, I'm looking forward to this sort of academy job and where that'll take me. Obviously it's another string to my bow, and, you know, I'm still at the club, which is great. But he said, you know, maybe you should look into getting into some of the NTC stuff and maybe a step towards, you know, some of the international things and, you know, just helping out and that kind of stuff. And I thought, oh, that's probably a really good idea. I never actually got around to following it through, and then obviously a few months later we were all the coaches were asked to apply for the roles within New Zealand football and the under 20 roles and the under 17s roles. So I kind of ummed and ahed about it for quite a while over Christmas, and I think it was the 15th of January was the cutoff date, and I actually left it to literally 11 o'clock in the morning of the 15th to send my CV in, because I was kind of like, you know, it maybe doesn't look too great if I haven't applied for it in the role that I'm at the only professional club. So it took me a long while, and I thought, you know what, I'll throw my CV in and just wait and see what happens. And you know, I spoke to, you know, Andreas, and we had a good conversation on Skype, and before anything was decided, I liked what was being said. I liked how the setup was going to be, and obviously the head coach is going to assist the All Whites, and obviously Des has gone with the All Whites to Spain as we speak, and they were talking about teams of coaches and stuff, and I thought that's a really good way of doing it. I think that's a great idea, and I said, look, if you choose me, you choose me, but if you're not, you have my backing, because I think what you're trying to do is great. So whatever you decide is I support everything, and you know, if I'm not a successful candidate, just when you're in Wellington, or, you know, you ever need any kind of help or anything as a, you know, no one with a, you know, not an agenda of players, but just like you need some help and you know, anything, just please, you know, look me up. And I kind of left it at that. And thankfully, I was asked to be Des's assistant, which obviously to reunite with Des again was great. And to be part of a national setup's like phenomenal. And I'm very, very proud to be undertaking that role coming up.
So was it New Zealand Football that's Andreas that suggested that partnership between the two of you again?
Oh, no, in general, what they wanted to do was put, you know, sort of partnerships of coaches yeah. together, not necessarily coaches that knew each other, but mm-hmm. working in together. And I really liked the way it was addressed and what they wanted to do. So getting good guys working together across the whole board, and I thought it was a really good way of doing it. And as I say, if it wasn't me, I would still support what they're doing. If it was you guys, I'd support it because I think it's the right thing to
do. Madness.
Patrick, perhaps not.
but yeah, I think it's the right way of going about it. And you know, hopefully we can have a successful time, and hopefully, you know, make some qualifications.
We'll go to the Guy Smith question first.
Okay, cool.
Which is good. Yeah. When you reflect on where the club was when you played for it, which was yeah. a few years ago now,
yeah, yeah.
And where it is now, yeah. what are the major differences that you see between those two football clubs?
Those two football club. I think, obviously, stability now. We've got a lot of stability, and obviously, with what happened with Terry and stuff was a shame for everybody, I think, because I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Terry. I wouldn't have been here if it wasn't for Ricky and Tony P. You know, we had a group of people that were predominantly from outside Wellington, and we were all here for the same purpose. And I thought what that brought was a real togetherness with the club. And you know, it was, looking back now, it was a real fun time. You kind of didn't know where the sort of roller coaster was going. But that was exciting. It brought a lot of good people together. I think it brought that family unity to the club, and I think we've missed that a little bit. However, I think the stability, obviously, with the owners that we've got now, you know, the club's in, you know, in a great position. You know, the owners are back in the team, and you know, as I say, off the field, I think things are very, very strong. In terms of the team that I played in and the teams that we've had, I think there's teams that have had probably more ability than the team I played in. Mm-hmm. But I think at times it's probably been fair to say there's been a, we had an inner desire within that dressing room of a number of leaders on the field. Not necessarily people saying, no, I want to be a captain, but actually guys, you know, your Tim Browns, your Ziggies, you know, your Tony Lockhead, you know, Manny Muscat, you know, Jure and Mark Paston, and, you know, Ife doing his magic on the wing, and, yeah. and you know, like a real, you know, Leo Bertos as well, like a real core group of players that really would have died for each other. And I think at times we've probably felt we seemed like we've been lacking that a little bit.
It's not something you can just turn on.
No. And I think this club's quite unique in a sense that you've, you know, to attract people here from overseas, you've got to get, you've got to know the people, and it's not just about a player and his ability. You need the overall package of what he brings, you know, his family life, you know, whether he's got kids or not. And there's a whole raft of things that need to be spot on. And, you know, you really do need to know what you're coming to. And I think we as a club could probably be better at maybe selling that dream to people, because, you know, we're 30 seconds from the water here. It's what a wonderful place to live.
Yep.
You know, I love living here. My family loves living here. And, I think we could probably sell it better to get players here, but yeah.
That kind of leads me on to another question, which is from Chris Kerr, which is why have you stuck around in New Zealand and not returned to the UK, where there are potentially infinite more coaching jobs available?
Yeah, no, I'm at a club that I feel very passionate about. You know, I love being in Wellington. My daughter was born here. You know, my wife loves it. As I say, I came to the club when we had such a family feel. Everybody feels or felt part of this organisation. And then, obviously, the roles that I've had. You know, the next best thing to being a player is on the grass with the boys. You're still in contact with what they're thinking, what they're about, because it wasn't that long ago since I retired. And, you know, I kind of love being out of, I suppose, I don't want to sound like a dickhead here, but kind of out of the limelight here. You're still working in a professional environment. You're still working with good people. You're not in a rat race where back in England you would be. And, you know, there's all kinds of nonsense going on. And, you know, I enjoy where I'm at. I really enjoy getting up and going to work. And I really feel I can help make a difference here. And, yeah, and, you know, I'm a Kiwi myself now. I've got citizenship.
You do,
you know,
yes.
Literally 6 months ago. So, you know, I really want to be here. But in football, I could be out on my ear tomorrow, pretty much like that. So that'll be in a whole new raft of things I need to do. But I'm pretty loyal with, and I always have been. You know, I've never been a player that's walked out on a contract when things have got difficult. I'm quite proud to say that I've fulfilled all my contracts as a player. You know, whenever I've never walked away. Just really love being here.
Do you think that family mentality on the field that you developed back a few years ago contributed to you wanting to become a coach? And, you know, I guess with Ives as well, because he's stayed and gone down that road. Do you think that helped or, you know, moved you in that direction?
Yeah, I think so. I think I'd always sort of started planning to go into coaching, and I never thought for a second that it was going to be here. I was quite smart in a sense that I wanted to, think about football after I retired from playing. I obviously didn't make enough money to better go and play golf every day, so I need to get a job, pretty much. And, you know, I even contemplated, even had a chat with my late father and me, my wife now, and of, you know, setting up my own business. And they're kind of like, why are we going to do that for? Like, you don't know how to do anything else. And I'm like, yeah, you're pretty right. Yeah, right, yeah. You know, I've been doing this. I left school at 16 years old. I left home at 16, and you know, I've been full-time football environment then. So why would I want to go and set up my own business when actually I know nothing about plumbing or electricians or, you know, that kind of thing?
Yeah.
And that's not knocking those guys, but I don't know how to do it. And so, you know, I kind of, you know, went down the coaching path and just decided, the family thing. I don't know. It's a good question. I can't really answer it.
You might be able to answer this one. What was your favourite moment while playing for the Phoenix?
Favourite moment? Finals.
Finals?
Football, yeah.
That game at Westpac where Eiffel scored and ran 100 metres down the field?
Yeah. I was more annoyed 10 minutes before when he hit the post, when I was like, oh, shit, we're going to extra time now. But I have one memory of when we actually played the prelim final in Sydney. And I remember they had that dubious handball and Jura got us back.
It's not dubious, it was blatant.
I actually saw him, and we went to watch, I think it was when we signed Jacob Tratt, and we went to watch, and was it Chris, was it Payne?
Chris Payne, yeah.
Chris Payne, yeah. And he was playing in this game, and I wanted to smack him. Like, you. Right? And I was like, I was so like.
Was Tretti on the opposition? Because you could have just thrown a contract down his nose. You twat him, and the contract's yours.
Definitely finals. I think, you know, even look back and you see snippets here and there of the Westpac full. It was just unbelievable occasion. And what I tell people this story quite a lot, but you know, I remember I lived in right in the city at the time, and I remember sort of going for a walk in the morning just to get a bit of fresh air. And even at like 9 or 10 in the morning, there were Phoenix shirts around, so you got that that fever, that buzz, that there's something happening today. And to have that over the space of like 3 or 4 weeks was phenomenal. And but I remember, I think, obviously having to go to extra time and go to all those roller coaster of emotions that we went through, I think it was just a step too far for us. I remember in the Sydney game when they went 2-1 up, and I remember looking at the clock, and it was like, I think it was 68 minutes, and I got absolutely nothing left, like nothing. I actually thought to myself, I can't go on anymore. And I think it was just a build up of all that emotion. You've got to play three finals. I mean, don't get me wrong, if we'd got to the final, I'd have been as high as anybody. But the emotion that you go through and to win it, and then pick yourself up again, and then to win that one, and then go into extra time, and then, you know, it was phenomenal. But I just wish, obviously we'd have got to a final, but finals football without a doubt.
Good. Any questions around the table?
You've been relatively quiet, Dave. Do you have anything you want to add? I know you usually do.
You know the question I want to ask as well, Cam, because I asked it to you earlier today, and it's so dumb.
Ask it.
But we're going to ask it anyway. So me and Patrick do a different podcast in which we watch
a certain 5-1 loss against Melbourne City. And we watch it every fortnight.
Yeah.
Exactly the same game, and we talk about it, and it is horrible. And it's called the worst game of all time, even though we agree it's not the worst game of all time. But there's one moment in that we speculate on every time we watch it. And the referee stops the game, and he comes over and he tells you off in the dugout for something you've been yelling or doing in the dugout. Do you remember that, and do you remember what you did?
I vaguely remember.
Did you deserve to be told off? I think it's probably as much as we want to hear here.
Do you know what? Can I get back to you? Because Des will remember. Yeah. Des will remember. Yeah. And I think we've had conversations about that because we've had a bit of a giggle about it ourselves. And I can't remember what it is off the top of my head, but let me get back to
you. It's funny because you have quite a smile and a chuckle to yourself after you've been told off. You're like, really?
Something. Let me get back to you. I promise I'll get back to you.
I'll hold you to that.
We'll keep speculating on it every fortnight anyway. Brilliant. Until we hear from you.
We had. It's funny because I think is the game where we, I think, did Costa miss the penalty?
Costa missed the penalty. Roy missed a chance.
Because I think we've, by all accounts, we've taken a little bit of stick over that game and what happened and stuff. And like you say, we could have been out of sight three up at half time. Yeah. Like, so easily, and we turned up with like a 5-1 deficit. You know, I'll find out. I'll get back to you.
But all those reasons are exactly why we chose this game. Like, there was a 7-1 loss to Sydney FC, but we were never in that. Whereas this game, it was so good.
We are the best team for a comfortable 25 minutes at the start of this game. Oh, absolutely. Every week, absolutely. Every time we watch it, I'm sitting going, how do we end up 5-1 down?
Amazing, honestly. Should we wrap up
with the final question, guys? Mm-hmm. The final question, which is on our theme. John Pellet from Auckland's ask it, would you rather fight one duck the size of Des Buckingham or 100 duck sized Des Buckinghams?
100 duck sized Des Buckingham.
Yes. I quite enjoy seeing that, actually. Anyway, thank you so much for joining us, Greeny. It's always a pleasure having people from the club on, and to get essentially head coach at the moment on is quite a coup for us. So thank you so much for coming.
Essentially.
He is the head coach.
Well, sure. Sorry.
But no, thank you for inviting me, and as again, thanks for you guys for all your support and really getting behind the guys, and you know, you're a big part of what we do, and it's always good to give something back, and I've tried to be as honest as I possibly can. And
we've asked questions that aren't necessarily going to put you on the spot, because that's what we can do.
But no, it's all good, and like I say, there's not much. You know, you guys don't know about you. You usually know things before I do, to be honest. And I will get back to you on that.
Wonderful. All the best for the weekend. All the best for the rest of the season. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Cheers.
All right, on to the All Whites, who have a game this weekend against Canada at 4 a.m. on Sunday morning, which is not going to go well for any of us. So maybe you might be awake with childs.
I might have almost gotten back to sleep by that stage.
Maybe.
Yeah, actually, I'm trying to think if it's my turn up with him or not. And if it's not, I won't be getting up for that.
You should schedule your turn to be this time.
Yeah, you should swap.
He's sick again.
That's not good.
You should not swap.
No.
Okay.
No.
So, 4 a.m. Apparently, it is going to be live streamed on YouTube by the Canadian Football Association. So,
the flying meese?
Moose. Oh, I guess what moose?
Moose is the plural of moose.
Yeah, we are playing the flying moose, aren't we?
Yes.
Yes.
We're playing the flying moose, not the flying moosettes.
The Laser Kiwis are playing the flying moose, which is outstanding. Do we think that we're going to care about the result at all this time next week?
No.
Why would we? It's a meaningless game. This game is about trying out some of those young kids. That's all it is. We talked
scouting.
About the squad already, and this is just seeing them play 90 minutes. The results are relevant.
Cool.
I mean, that's fine.
That's fine.
And I think it's a great introduction for some of the kids that are going over. Canada is not exactly a powerhouse of football.
Canada have a player from Unattached FC in their squad, which is amazing.
Yeah, awesome. And not even we have Unattached
FC. We don't anymore. So obviously we mentioned it with Greeny before, but Justin Gully's been called up to replace Stormrow.
That's so good.
I'm not quite sure why Stormrow is out.
He may have chosen to sit out. Because that has happened across the squad quite a lot.
Yeah, I'm very glad it's goals. It's obviously a blow for Team Wellington.
Yeah, because he was probably the best player for Team Wellington at the weekend. He was phenomenally good.
At the weekend and through the whole season.
Yeah.
Like,
depending on who's available, you could actually probably chuck Jack Henry Sinclair back there to do a job.
No, you don't want to do that.
And then, as I said, depending on who's available, and then play someone else up front, because we have more a wide attacking option.
We'll get to Team Wellington later on.
Sorry, I'm talking all white team, buddy. Come on, focus.
Yeah, the first game that we'd see Fritz's All Whites in action. So I'm excited. I think I'm more excited about this than anything in the Hudson era, bar the last few games, I think.
Even his
you see them play Mexico in the USA?
I saw Michael McGlinchey's performances, but
I was quite excited about the Hudson Rain at the start of it, though. Like, I think we all were.
I guess this could fall off, but this just feels different to me. This feels different. That it's not one guy ruling the roost from the top. This
and it's not.
To be fair, you haven't exactly given it time to find out.
No. But everything that people like Greeny are saying, or with Dez and Greeny coming on board, and Jose and Tentz coming on board, and Andreas Hieraf above him, and everything just seems a bit different and more structured this time around. And
it doesn't feel like someone's blowing smoke up your ass. Basically,
it actually feels like New Zealand football have learned the lessons from the last 3 years and gone, that didn't really work how we wanted it to. How can we avoid that again? How can we do some succession planning? And we've got a decent structure in place to do that. And that's kind of where we're at now without seeing the outcome of those changes.
I mean, obviously give it time, and in a year's time, we might be all on the Fritz keeps misleading us and why can't he see this way, but I don't think that's going to happen. But I'm on record saying that now, but it could. Are you going to watch this, Dave? Are you going to get up and watch this?
No, I'm not going to watch it live. I'm hopeful that it being YouTube streaming means I can watch a replay.
Well, that's a good point, yeah.
I'll be pinning my hopes on that, because 4 a.m. on a Sunday morning, no.
My plan is to not go home and like, bars close 4 a.m., go home and watch the game. That's not going to work. I'm going to sleep through it. But
I mean, it'd be great to watch this if it was at a more reasonable time.
If it was midnight or 1 a.m., it's probably
and,
reasonable.
And yeah, so hopefully there's a replay on YouTube, because I will definitely invest a couple of hours in this if I can. Yeah. But just
it's
that time of morning.
See, 4 a.m. is a much more reasonable time for me.
me too.
And I've been awake since 3 a.m. this morning, so you know, I'm quite comfortable with the 4 a.m. kickoff. It's just if it's my sleep through, I'm definitely not going to watch.
Anyway, that's probably all we can say on that, I guess.
Yeah, basically, I'm just really looking forward to seeing some kids have a run of the white shirt, get a bit blooded for it, see if they've got any chance of stepping up to that kind of level, and see how they react to the pressure of being playing for the nation in what is the least pressurized international environment you could get.
Yeah, totally.
So that's exciting, but just seeing the outcome is going to matter.
Speaking of least pressure, let's go to the most pressurized game we've seen in a long time, which was Team Wellington taking on Hamilton Wanderers at the weekend, needing a win against the worst team in the league to secure second place in a home semi and a better shot at OFC Champions League. They went 2-0 up very early in the game, gave away a shit penalty, gave away a shit goal through the hands of Scott Pasale, then gave away a shit penalty that I don't think was a penalty whatsoever, and had to do it the hard way, relied on an 88th minute goal to seal a 3-2 win. Dave, you were there. Cam, you weren't there. Frosty, you weren't there. So just the two of us who were there.
Sorry, my flights didn't exactly make it easy for
that's
me.
That's fair enough. Oh, you missed the start. You missed two goals, probably.
No, I missed one goal. I missed about 5 minutes, and there was a goal in those 5 minutes.
Right,
so
yeah,
it was
slightly
annoying, but no, it was a good game. It was frustrating because it felt like T-Dubs at halftime probably should have been up by 3 or 4. And if that had been the case, they would have done it easily. But they were only up by 2 at the half, I believe. And, then they gave away 2 pretty – like, certainly the first goal, very soft. The penalty, I haven't seen a replay of this, but watching live, it seemed harsh.
It seemed like Liam Wood was throwing his entire body to try and stop the shot. And as part of that, the ball ended up hitting his hand. I don't think there was any movement of any intention that he wanted to handle this. He wanted to block it somewhere else.
Nothing about it looked like unnatural positioning or anything like that.
Movement of arm towards ball.
But I, like I say, I haven't seen a replay, so perhaps that angle and being able to slow it down shows more than I saw in real time. But it looked a bit harsh, but it made that second half much more exciting.
Well, it was nerve-wracking.
With T-Dubs coming out on the right side of it, I would say it was a great game. If it had ended 2-2, they would have been absolutely kicking themselves, because they, in that first half, deserved to win comfortably. They had all of the ball, all of the chances, and should have put it away 3 or 4 nil in the first half.
Yeah. Andy Bevan scored a goal early on, which was an absolute outstanding piece of passing play between the whole team. I think it started right at the back at Basale and made its way across the pitch, forward and across the pitch and switched, and then ended up Andy Bevan tapping it in back post. I think that's how it went at the end. It was just so amazing that I can't remember exactly how it happened. Then Jack Henry Sinclair got chopped down and got a penalty, scored it. And then, the two goals we mentioned to Hamilton, Xavier Pratt, and then Armin Pasicic from the penalty spot, who surprisingly didn't run straight over to Hard News, giving him the shush goal celebration. But then Andy Bevan popping up very late after a fantastic Justin Gully cross in.
Very tidy finish as well.
Yeah, and almost bounced out off the post. It was pinpoint accuracy, we'll say. The upshot of that is that there's a home semi-final this weekend against Canterbury United. Canterbury over the weekend had a 2-1 win over Eastern Suburbs. which wasn't looking likely for them either.
Two pretty late goals, wasn't it?
Yeah, they were down for ever since the 6th minute. They were down 1-0 to a penalty. And then in the 87th and the 90th minute, they scored 2 goals and managed to avoid having to face Auckland City in the semis. So they won that 2-1 and booked a spot against... Well, they could have hosted a T-Dubs loss, but either way, it was going to be T-Dubs after they won that game. Auckland City themselves had a 2-0 win over the Phoenix before the Phoenix game. Emiliano Tade, his first goal was actually not too dissimilar from the Jason Hoffman goal. We went the entire Phoenix section without mentioning the Jason Hoffman goal. It was kind of like bouncing around the box. Like it ended up at Tade's feet a couple of times. He had a shot that was blocked. It was almost a carbon copy of Jason Hoffman's goal on the same goal, which was a bit strange. Southern United capped off their outstanding season by their standards with a 3-1 win over Hawke's Bay. They finished 5th. And they finished closer to first place in the league than last place, which
is awesome.
Is awesome, given everything that's happened with Southern United before. Is awesome for them to see them up there. I'm really happy about that for them.
The only bad thing about their entire season was they weren't in with a shout for the semis for longer. Hmm. You know, they fell out of them quite a way. But the fact that they finished 5th was a huge fillip for them.
Yeah, and then Waitakere United and Tasman played out a 8-goal thriller. Ended up being 5-3.
That's a way to finish the season.
Tasman,
isn't it?
And it was 3-all, and then to Waitakere. There was 3-all, and then Waitakere scored 2 latish goals to win it.
Brilliant.
I want to point out one thing that we always at the start of the season talk about how close the league is this year.
But it's always Auckland at the top. It's always T-Dubs.
Correct. But this season, I do think there was something different. I think Southern are a good example of this, of them finishing 5th and actually being in the mix. But I think if you look at that Hamilton Wanderers performance, and they finished dead last by some margin, they only got 5 or 6 points out of the whole season.
1-1, 3 draws.
But they pushed T-Dubs very hard in that last game of the season. You know, we're seeing, even though they're not necessarily capable of putting together performances across a season, in individual games, we're actually seeing a lot better performances, because the Phoenix were the same against Auckland City. Auckland City have been exceptional, but a bunch of kids went down only 2-0, and to be honest, the goals weren't great goals. It was a little unlucky that it was 2-0. I thought the Phoenix were in this game for a long time.
Ollie Sale had an absolute blinder. Give me that. And it was a good goal from Tade and a messy other goal, which Ollie had no chance of saving.
Ollie should be nice and fresh, though.
Well, he should, but honestly, mate, he had probably the best game I've ever seen him play. He was fantastic.
But it's conversely, not like, Patterson had one of the worst games I've seen in a long time. He was not good.
Not a professional footballer.
But it's great to be getting down to the last round of this league and actually seeing the teams at the bottom still pushing the teams at the top
right
to the 90th minute.
Hamilton's win, I think, came against Eastern Suburbs.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure they had qualified for the 4. And to be fair, they looked like 3 weeks ago, looked like they could have been pushing for the top spot as well. So, again, they fell away like they did last year. They're just fortunate they were far enough ahead of 5th that they didn't miss the semis. Yeah. But, yeah, so it is, yeah. You're right.
So we're still seeing those same two teams at the top, and they still, you know, they look the business up there. But the rest of the league is coming along, and I don't think it's going to be far away before we're seeing those guys get pushed every week rather than just some weeks.
Yeah, so the table as a whole ended up with Auckland City on 40 points. Team Wellington 3 points behind on 37, Canterbury United 1 point behind on 36, and Eastern Suburbs on 32. So Canterbury made the big step up and were pushing T-Dubs the whole way, and if the games between them had gone slightly differently, it would have been a different story.
They didn't do particularly well last year, did they?
Canterbury, no, they didn't make the 6 and the 4.
Them and Waitakere have basically just swapped.
Yeah, that's the thing I'm going to come to. Southern United in 5th, Tasman in 6th, which is awesome to see those three South Island teams all in the top half of the table, basically. Then it's Waitakere. Well, okay, 6th is not
half the table. 6th out of 10.
I realised what I had said. Waitakere is the big drop-off this season. I mean, they were pushing T-Dubs last year for 2nd spot and finished 3rd. And
the semi-final, which was unbelievable, the 6-all draw after extra time. Yeah.
I mean, that's not going to get top this weekend. We can't expect that to happen again.
At least with the schedule, they've built in time for that to happen and still get to the Knicks this year.
Yeah.
I'm planning on showing up, so it's definitely not. It's going to be a 0-0 draw, go to Pens or something.
You still get to see me on a shooter. Then it's Hawke's Bay. It's Waitakere and Hawke's Bay that are big two teams that have dropped off a whole lot to where they should be. For everything that people say about Brett Angel, he's just not performed this season whatsoever. They did have a very weak squad, but that's his job. Then it's the Phoenix, who are always going to be bottom half of the table by default.
They're going to get some great results, but just because of the availability of players and what they're trying to achieve with the team means that they're not necessarily going to get the results that you might otherwise expect.
All children.
Exactly. And they also have the problem of the two-year cycle, and this was the first year of the two-year cycle, where the players come in and 1 year and get a year of experience and then play another year and then age out of the team, age out of the under 20 age bracket. So this was the shit year in inverted commas. So hopefully we see a bit more from them next year. Although if the first team keeps poaching all the best players, maybe we won't. And then Hamilton down the bottom. But that brings us to the semifinals. Auckland taking on Eastern Suburbs from Kiwatea Street Saturday. This is 2 p.m. as well as the T-Dubs game, I
correct,
think.
Yes.
And Team Wellington playing Canterbury United at David Farrington, thank
on
God,
Sunday.
On Sunday at 2 p.m. Both those games are on Sky Sport. Which is awesome that Sky are actually broadcasting from David Farrington.
This is great. I'm personally, I wanted the T-Dubs, but it's just for very selfish reasons to be at the stadium. However, the 2 o'clock kickoff at David Farrington Park means you really can do an entire day of football on Sunday. Go along to that game, even if it goes to penalties, you've still got 2 hours to get down to the pub and have a beer before you have to walk to the stadium for the Knicks at 7:30.
Yeah, totally.
It's absolutely brilliant. They listened to the feedback from last year where it was a 4 o'clock kickoff, and I know you didn't, but I had to leave it full time and normal time and missed the 4 goals in extra time plus the penalties, which was an amazing thing just because I had to be at the stadium. So I'm glad that's not going to happen.
Yeah,
this year.
We turned up 20 minutes late and we were lucky. We won the game 5-0, but none of the goals had been scored by the time we got there. I think we turned up and a goal went in within 5 minutes. So it's continued on the awesome day we'd already been having.
Yeah.
But 2 o'clock makes so much more sense. It's better at the ground for the spectators. It's a little bit warmer. You can make more of a day of it.
Typically, it's supposed to be raining.
I was going
to
say, it rains all weekend.
Oh, great. Perfect. So it's just like the OFC semi-final then.
Yeah. Although that stopped raining dead on kickoff, which was brilliant.
We were already all drenched then by that, so it was like, yeah.
No, we weren't.
Because some of us had clubroom passes.
Cover!
Yes. But no, I think it's great work from New Zealand Football Team Wellington and Sky. I'll give them a shout-out because they deserve it this time around for listening to the fans and the club and putting the game at David Farrington. And I know it's hard for them to broadcast from there, but they're doing it, which is bloody awesome.
It is. It's really good. Which actually means get there early so you get a park because there's going to be quite a few parks gone because of the OBS trucks.
Like 3 parks. Like, it's not going to make a...
There'll be more than one truck.
More than one truck. They're pulling out all the stops for us, which is nice.
No, there just is. There's always more than one truck.
No, there's just one big truck, isn't there?
No, there's more than one. There was two at the North Harbour Stadium on the weekend.
Oh, okay, but that's slightly different.
Did they have 2 trucks down there?
Plus 2 minivans as well.
All right, Cam.
So get there early. Get yourself a park.
Yeah, or catch the bus out because then you don't have to find a park and public transport's good. Kiwis overseas. Cam, are you ready for that?
I sure am.
Last week I forgot to edit out that I called them Optimize, so brought to you by Optivise. Thank you, Jared. Kiwis overseas, take us away.
I actually got a message from Jared asking about a bit of a snip of that footage as well. So
footage.
So the audio as well.
Of me calling it Optimize.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Good. I hope he's going to use that for something.
I've angered the sponsors.
Yeah. Well done, Pat. Elliot Collier made his first start for Chicago Fire, coming in for the absent Bastian Schweinsteiger and scoring Chicago's only goal as they faced Minnesota United.
Sub.
Collier volleyed in the rebound after a shot was saved, taking advantage of a defensive mix-up which involved Michael Boxall. Boxall was otherwise solid in the match, and his team went on to win the match 2-1. Chicago have a bye next round, while Boxall will miss Minnesota's trip to New York Red Bulls. Vancouver Whitecaps once again found themselves under the cosh this week, although unlike last week, even a strong Stefan Marinovic performance couldn't save them, and they lost away to Atlanta United. Vancouver were reduced to 10 men in the 13th minute after VAR spotted an infringement in the area, which also saw Atlanta awarded a penalty. An own goal in the 58th minute ensured there was no way back for Vancouver as Atlanta went on to win 4-1. They meet LA Galaxy on Sunday. Colorado Rapids and Portland Timbers had byes in this round, although we'll be back in action next week against Sporting Kansas City and FC Dallas, respectively. The US secondary also kicked off this weekend, but only Kyle Adams was in action as Rio Grande Valley, there you go, Patrick, just for you, drew 1-1 with St. Louis. James Musa remains sidelined through injury, although he is training with the first team, while Corey Brown's move to Fresno FC was not completed in time for him to feature in their first game, although a one-year contract has been confirmed. Shows how much attention he pays to Kiwis overseas when he didn't even notice me actually calling him out on that, did it? No. Ryan Thomas captained Pex Vol as they went down 4-3 at home to Feyenoord. 2 Robin Van Persie goals in the first 15 minutes put them on the back foot early, and an awful goalkeeping mistake early in the second half saw them go 3 goals down. As well, couldn't recover from that margin, although 2 goals in the last 5 minutes made for an exciting end to the game. As well, are still holding on to a European playoffs place, but are now only separated from 8th place by 1 point and need a win against relegation-threatened Sparta Rotterdam after the international break.
That
Did you see the TIFO?
TIFO was brilliant, wasn't
it? Amazing. If you haven't seen it, look it up. It's amazing. For a single player from another country, that's awesome to do.
We would never do that for someone like on that scale.
We're not allowed to.
Oh, we are. Oh, we kind of are. Like,
that sort of thing we could probably get away with.
But we wouldn't put that much effort in. Like, we barely put that much effort in for our own players, let alone the foreigners.
So. To be fair, you put a lot of effort in for a lot of players. So some of those TIFOs that you've done.
Yeah, that was years ago, though.
No, Siggy and Manny.
That was years ago.
That was years ago.
All right. We're going to roll the laser Kiwi out at some point again, I reckon.
We really should. Yeah, we really should.
Buff it up for the last game of the season.
Actually, see if you can do it every home game over on the closed off part of the stadium.
That would ruin the magic.
No.
If we just pull it out randomly, you'll be like, wow, that's back. That'd be cool.
Marco Rojas was an unused sub.
We need some flames. We need to get like a flame machine and like flame the laser Kiwi from underneath.
Burn it, you mean?
No.
What does that even mean? Flame machine for our TIFO underneath.
So this is the league that is fearful of any sort of pyro. You want people walking around with flamethrowers aiming them at material that is extremely flammable. Do I understand this correctly?
We're not obviously allowed a smoke machine, but a flame machine sounds like it'll get through immediately.
Oh, fuck you all.
It's not a flare. It's a flame machine.
Yeah, it's definitely not a flare.
Portable
so therefore
marine
flame.
Flame machines.
You don't... What's Marco doing?
He was an unused sub for Heerenveen as they drew 2-2 with Utrecht. Is that what you like? No? Good, thanks. Tyler Boyd started again and was the creator for Tondela's only goal as they lost 2-1 to Maritimo. Boyd controlled a flicked header with his chest and lifted a pass over the defence to set up the opener. But goals either side of halftime saw Tondela leave without any points. Boyd was substituted in the 57th minute. Mamelodi Sundowns made it through to the through the first round of Champions League after beating Rayon Sports 2-0 in the second leg, although Jeremy Brockie only came on in the 89th minute. With no action for Burnley or West Ham, it was quite weak for the English-based Kiwis. Stephen Ould is still recovering from a knee injury, although he returned to the bench for Morecambe's 0-0 draw with Colchester. Max Crocombe saw action for Salford City as they beat Spennymoor 3-2 at the weekend before guaranteeing the relegation of North Ferriby United in midweek with a 1-1 draw. Salford were reduced to 10 men inside the first half hour, but held on to the lead until conceding in the 87th minute. The two results see Salford retain top spot in the National League North by 3 points, albeit having played one more game than second place to Harrogate Town. Crocombe will miss the match against Kidderminster this weekend due to All Whites duty and will find some stiff competition on his immediate return after Salford signed Nottingham Forest and Sweden under-23 goalkeeper Tim Erlandsson on a one-month loan. There was mixed game time for all the other White selectees, with Nick Sarnev getting 90 minutes for AFC Wimbledon reserves as they beat Forest Green Rovers 3-1, and Adam Mitchell also seeing 90 minutes as Bolton under-23s returned to winning ways, beating Cardiff under-23s 3-0. Meanwhile, Sam Brotherton came on in the 86th minute for Sunderland under-23s, while Michael Woad did not feature. Nico Boxall picked up his first yellow card and second clean sheet as Viborg beat HB Koog 1-0. Viborg's unbeaten run since the winter break has seen them rise to fifth, just 6 points off the top of the Danish second tier. Of the other all-white call-ups, Nico Kerwin was missing as AC Mestre lost 2-1 to Ravenna. Maya Bevan and Clayton Lewis were not in matchday squads for Vancouver and Scunthorpe respectively, while Themi Zimopoulos remained out of action with the Greek league still suspended. Henry James made his first start of the season for Limerick as they lost to Shamrock Rovers. Got the name wrong.
What's going on, Cam?
He's got the name wrong.
Has he?
Henry James, yeah. Henry Cameron. Yeah, I really should proofread, shouldn't I? So Henry Cameron made his first start of the season for Limerick as they lost to Shamrock Rovers. Cameron had been offered a contract release but was unsuccessful in seeking an English club to join in the January transfer window. Limerick are sixth in the Irish Premier Division. Ben McKendry was signed for Palasuta in the Finnish First Division after having been released by Vancouver Whitecaps at the end of last year. They were promoted last season after finishing top of the second tier and after two previous failures at the playoff stage. Chris James has joined the Finnish leagues again, signing for second tier club KTP, who were also newly promoted. Kiwis overseas ladies. Ali Riley was in action as Rosengard won their Swedish Cup semi-final against Djurgården 2-1. Riley won a penalty for which Rosengard scored the opener. And the score remained 1-0 until Djurgården scrambled home a 90th minute equaliser before Rosengard managed to win it in the 4th minute of stoppage time. The final will be held in May, with Rosengard having won the cup for the past 2 years. Rio Percival's FC Basel knocked out of the Swiss Cup in the quarterfinals, going down 4-2 to FC Zurich. Basel are back in action against Lugano on Thursday. Aaron Naylor and Bordeaux battled to a 1-1 draw after 2 yellow cards and a 4-minute spell saw them reduced to 10 players for over an hour against Guecamp. Bordeaux took the lead just after half-time but had to withstand a second-half barrage to claim a point. They remain in 5th place, missing the chance to leapfrog Paris, who they travel to in a fortnight's time. There was also an early red card for Köln, but a very different result, as they were beaten 8-0 by Bayern Munich. Amber Hearn played 90 minutes, but Michaela Moore did not make it off the bench as her replacement in the starting lineup was sent off in the 32nd minute after bringing down an attacker through on goal. The loss drops Köln into the relegation zone with a tough match against third-placed Freiburg at the weekend. Katie Rude did not make it off the bench as Juventus beat Bari 4-1. The goal from the penalty spot broke a 472-minute run of clean sheets and was the first goal Juventus have conceded at home in competitive fixtures. The US season gets underway next week, but Abby Ersig got on the score sheet in North Carolina Courage's last preseason match, scoring their first from a corner as they beat Washington 3-0.
Thank you, Cam, and thank you, Jared, even though you got Henry Cameron's name wrong.
Hey, we can't
be
really
nice
call
sponsors.
Yeah. I mean, no, sorry,
anything
sorry.
At all.
Sorry. I said thank you.
Does anyone know what's happening with Elijah Just?
No update on his contractual stuff, but why don't we tweet at Declan and find out?
Declan will just tell us that Just is a great player and that he will do well overseas, which we all agree with. So.
100%. He's going to do brilliantly overseas, yes. But I just want to know that he is overseas.
That is the pod for this week. A bit of a bumper pod. It was good to have Greeny on. Trying to line up a couple of other guests for the next 2 weeks, but we'll see how that pans out. But I think, yes, I'm going to thank the three of you for joining me, the listeners for listening, and that's everything for this week. Good night.
That is possibly the best you've ever done.
Nailed it.
I'm in shock. That was legitimately the first take.
I was waiting for him to look down and go, oh, I forgot to press record.
'Completely ignoring the run sheet and just jumping into the things out of order brings you...
Return of the Greenacre, part 3, brings you...
You butchered that.
Yeah, I did.
Portable marine flame machines bring you...
This season's most popular Phoenix manager brings you... All the shots, none of the goals brings you...
Returning to the scene of the crime brings you...
Groundskeeper Greenacre brings you...
Caretaker Greenacre.
I know, but Groundskeeper Willie sounds funny.
Yeah, but Greentaker.
Greentaker
brings you. Can we please do that as a banner? Greentaker as a banner would be hilarious. Greentaker as a banner.
You have to explain it, therefore it doesn't work.
He's a green taker.
He's a green taker.
Does not make it any clearer.